Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Well, before we do get started, I do want to let you know the program's brought to you in part by the financial support of our listeners. You can support the show with a one-time donation, support.greatdetectives.net, and you can also become an ongoing Patreon supporter for as little as $2 a month, patreon.greatdetectives.net. Original air date for today's episode of The Avenger is March the 7th, 1946. And the title is The Cradle of Doom.
The Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that just us sets. Crime does not pay.
The Avenger, sworn enemy of evil, is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected several inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. Most remarkable of these inventions is the highly secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, The Avenger and the Cradle of Doom.
Jim, there's a Miss Edith Wiley here to see you.
Who? Well, you didn't make any appointments for me this morning, did you, Fern?
No, but this girl...
Oh, I'm sorry, but we've got to finish these chemical tests today. If it's important, ask her to come back tomorrow at 11.
Mr. Brandon, excuse me for intruding like this, but you've got to see me now. It's really very important.
Miss Wiley, really...
Listen to me for 5 minutes, Mr. Brandon, and then I'll go if you want me to.
All right, Miss Wiley, sit down and tell me what's on your mind.
Thank you. I've come about my fiancé, John Martin. He's been framed by his brother, Tobias, and is being held incommunicado at White Ridge.
White Ridge? Where's that?
It's a small private sanitarium about 3 miles from here, out on Larkspur Road.
Oh, I see. You'd better take this down in your book, Fern.
Right, Jim.
Now, Miss Wiley, you're telling me your fiancé has been committed to White Ridge by his brother.
Yes. John's perfectly sane, Mr. Brandon. But Tobias wants to collect his share of the Martin estate. And this is the method he's using to do it.
That's a very serious charge. Anyone found guilty of such a crime faces a penalty for kidnapping and extortion.
I know. Believe me, I wouldn't be making these accusations if I weren't sure.
Exactly what does Tobias Martin stand to gain by this?
Several million dollars worth of John's holdings. You see, when John's father died about a year ago, he willed an equal share of stock in the Martin steel mills to each of his two sons. This stock cannot be sold, but if either of the sons dies or is declared incompetent, the entire holdings pass into the hands of the other brother.
Mm-hmm. How long has John been at White Ridge?
Almost 2 weeks.
Why didn't you report it to the police immediately?
Because I hoped the whole thing would be settled quietly. I thought I could get John out of White Ridge and placed in my custody. And when that failed, I tried to reach Tobias, reason with him.
You haven't seen Tobias then?
No. I went to his home several times, but his secretary told me he was ill. Wouldn't even let me in the house.
Who's in charge of White Ridge Sanitarium?
A man by the name of Dr. Marcus Falco and his wife.
Have they many patients?
Only a few, I think. From what I can gather, the doctor limits his service to the very rich. Mr. Brandon, can you help me? Can you get John out of White Ridge?
Well, I'll certainly look into the matter, Miss Wiley. Where can I get in touch with you?
I've taken a little cottage just west of White Ridge to be near John. 1215 Larkspur Road. The telephone is Larkspur 9000.
Thank you. I'll call you the moment I have anything to report.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Brandon.
Well, never mind that, Miss Wiley, and don't worry. If John Martin is sane, he'll be released. And the law will take care of everything else. That must be White Ridge, just ahead there, Fern. That big house on the hill surrounded by poplars.
Oh, gosh, it's lovely. Certainly doesn't look like a sanitarium, does it?
Oh, not from the front, anyway. Oh, here's the driveway.
Jim, considering the close watch the Medical Society keeps on private sanitariums, how could it be possible for a sane person to be committed to one of them?
Well, an unscrupulous person might manage it somehow, but his chances of getting away with it would be mighty slim.
Of course, there is a possibility that John Martin isn't sane. Edith Wiley could be prejudiced about that.
Well, that's the reason I want to see and talk with John before I get involved in this. Oh, here we are. You'd better wait here in the car, Fern.
All right.
What is it, please?
My name's Brandon. I've come to see John Martin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Visitors are not allowed, except on Sundays.
Oh, this is urgent. I'd like to speak to Dr. Falco, please.
But the doctor's busy. I'm Mrs. Falco. As I said, you may visit Mr. Martin on Sunday. Nova.
What is it, Joanna? Who's at the door?
Mr. Brandon to see John Martin, Marcus.
Dr. Falco?
Yes?
Well, this is a matter of extreme importance, Doctor. I must see John Martin at once.
Are you a relative?
Well, as a matter of fact, no, I'm not.
The visit is out of the question. We observe rigid rules here, Mr. Brandon. Complete rest and quiet has been prescribed for Mr. Martin.
I suppose Tobias Martin's permission is required in order to see John.
That
right?
is correct, except for the regular visiting hour on Sunday.
I understand. Good day.
Good day.
Marcus, what is all this interest in John Martin? That Miss Wiley, but now this man...
Leave John Martin and his visitors to me, Joanna. I know what is best for
That's
him.
That's what you said when you brought him here. But I'm not so sure it's true. I wonder if his brother weren't so rich.
John Martin is in my care. Now let me deal with him in my own way. Go to the kitchen now. Our patients will be wanting their lunch.
Not very hospitable, were they, Jim?
Oh, that place is fortified with regulations, Fern.
Well, what do we do now? Call on Tobias?
Not yet. Let's drive down the road to Miss Wiley's place. I want to ask her a few more questions.
Jim, do you suppose that Dr. Falco could be a phony?
Well, no, Fern, not in the usual sense, anyway. He's a licensed physician, took his degree in Vienna 30 years ago.
Oh, you looked him up before we came out here?
Certainly. He's been specializing in psychiatric cases and unusual nerve disorders for the past 10 years.
There's always the chance, though, that he may have turned unscrupulous. In John Martin's case, there's a lot of money at stake.
Now, Fern, don't jump the hurdles before we come to them.
There's Miss Wiley's cottage, Jim. 1215, that was the number. Oh, there she is in the garden. Hello, Miss Wiley.
Oh, hello. I wasn't expecting to see you so soon. Won't you come in?
Why, no, we haven't time. We've just come from White Ridge.
Did you see John? How is he, Mr. Brandon?
Oh, I don't know. They wouldn't even let me inside the place.
But you're connected with the police. You could have forced them to let you see him.
Yes, but I understood you wanted this matter handled quietly.
Oh, I do.
Then I suppose I'll have to wait until Sunday to see him.
You know, there is one way you could talk with John without their knowing it.
Oh, what's that?
Well, the patient's rooms are all on the second floor in the back of the house. John's room is the one right next to the fire escape. After dark, you could climb up there and talk with him through the bars without anyone knowing it.
That sounds like a good idea, Jim.
Yes. I think I'll do that very thing tonight. Thanks, Miss Wiley.
And that's the whole story, Mr. Brandon. When every other method to get control of my money failed, Tobias framed me into this place. You see, while I'm in here, he has complete control of the Martin Steel Mills and is able to collect the dividends on all my holdings.
You think Tobias and Dr. Falco are in this thing together, then?
Well, what else can I think? Dr. Falco examined me and declared me mentally incompetent. You can judge for yourself whether that's true.
Well, John, my opinion is all in your favor, but I'm not a doctor, and a layman's judgment in a case of this kind doesn't amount to anything. Only a physician's verdict would stand up in court.
Well, then go to Dr. Stanley Myers. He's been my doctor since childhood. Less than a month ago, he gave me a complete going over and told me I was in perfect condition. He has a complete case history on me from the time I was 6.
That's exactly what we need. I'll go to see Myers first thing in the morning.
You think I'll be out of here by tomorrow, then?
No, it may take a few days to straighten out the technicalities. You see, I want to make certain your exit from here is strictly legal. Otherwise, we might run into trouble when we bring charges against your brother.
All right. I'll try to be patient, but work as fast as you can, will you, Brandon? This place is worse than a prison. Sometimes I think this Dr. Falco is really trying to drive me mad.
Dr. Falco, now that you know the police are interested in John Martin's case, maybe you'll give us some straight answers.
Oh, of course, Inspector. When Mr. Brandon came here yesterday, he did not tell
me. Go ahead, Jim. Let's get to the bottom of this.
Dr. Falco, when you examined John Martin 2 weeks ago, just what did you find wrong with him?
Well, to put it as simply as I can, his symptoms indicate that he is suffering from acute mania. And he has constant hallucinations that border on delusional insanity.
In other words, you pronounced him dangerously insane and recommended his commitment here at White Ridge for treatment.
Yes. I am sure that any reputable psychiatrist would agree with me in regard to John Martin's symptoms.
Then you won't mind if we take a look at your records, Doctor.
My records, Mr. Brandon?
Yes. Also, the commitment papers bearing the signature of Tobias Martin.
Oh, of course. Naturally, everything was handled in the proper manner. You will not find any irregularities here at White Ridge.
The papers, please.
Well, they're in a safe in the adjoining room. I'll get them.
Well, Inspector, what do you think?
It's pretty hard to say offhand, Jim. We know Dr. Myers is on the level, and he's willing to swear there's nothing wrong with John Martin, but this Dr. Falco is something else again. He's a smooth operator, all right. We're going to have our troubles pinning anything on him, even if he is mixed up in this.
If Tobias Martin brought Dr. Falco out, we'll find some way to prove it, Inspector.
Yeah. Say, this is some layout he's got to accommodate three or four patients.
Here are the papers.
Well, thank you. Oh, here's the one we're after, Inspector.
Oh, yes. It's signed by Tobias Martin, all right.
Uh-huh. How many times have you seen Tobias Martin, Dr. Falco?
Oh, only twice. First, when he brought John here to be examined, and then again when he committed him.
Take charge of these papers, Inspector. Tobias Martin has a little explaining to do.
But I tell you, Mr. Martin is ill. He can't see anyone.
No, who are you?
Well, I'm Charles Burton, confidential secretary to Tobias Martin.
Now, Mr. Burton, we're the police. Step aside. We're coming in.
Police? Oh, why didn't you say so?
Where is Martin?
Well, the room at the top of the stairs. I'll tell him you're coming.
We'll be right behind you. Come on, Jim.
It looks like Tobias intends to give us the runaround, Inspector.
Sick and bad. You'd think he'd cook up a better dodge than that. Well, have you announced this, Burton?
Mr. Martin will see you.
I'll say he will.
In here, please.
Tobias Martin?
Yes? What is all this?
Well, I'm Inspector White. This is Jim Brandon. We're here about your brother.
John, what's he up to now?
Well, at the moment, he's rather anxious to be released from Dr. Falco's sanitarium.
Oh, so that's where he is.
Look, Mr. Martin, let's not waste time.
Uh-huh.
You know where your brother is and how he got there, and you probably know what the penalty is for falsely committing a person to an institution of that kind.
What? What are you talking about?
This. John Martin's commitment papers signed by you.
Preposterous. I never signed this paper.
You deny that's your signature?
Well, no, I can't very well deny that. It's my writing, all right. But to the best of my knowledge, I never laid eyes on this document before.
Now, what about you, Burton? Do you deny all knowledge of this, too?
Well, I certainly do. That signature must have been forged.
There's one way to prove whether you signed that paper or not, Martin.
How?
The signature was witnessed by Dr. Falco. It's just a matter of bringing you two face to face.
But Mr. Martin is too ill to leave his bed. The doctor left him in my care, and I can't take the...
Then we'll bring Dr. Falco here. We'll soon find out who's lying.
Now back to the Avenger and the Cradle of Doom.
You and your secret experiments. You see where they've landed us, under the surveillance of the police.
Will you keep quiet, Joanna? My experiments have nothing to do with it. The police are merely checking on John Martin.
That's what you say, Marcus. But how do I know? For years, you've kept your experiments a secret from me. That room in the tower that is always locked. And what of that big motor in the basement? What are they used for?
I have told you. Just part of my experiment. A wonderful experiment that may be the salvation of all the mental unfortunates in the world.
I do not believe you, Marcus. I think that you have bartered science for gain. Either that, or you yourself are mad.
Joanna.
Hear me out, Marcus. All these years, I've labored at your side. For what I believe to be a great and humane cause. My faith in you was quite complete, but it was also blind, and you have failed me in it.
No, I haven't.
I'm warning you. I will not stand beside you now to face I do not know what they...
Joanna, stop. And listen to me for a moment. I have nothing to hide from you or anyone else. It is only that my experiment is in its infancy. And I wish to keep it a secret until its worth was proved. Come to the tower room with me. I will show you. The mind becomes unbalanced. You no longer cope with the problems and the complexities of life. Therefore, to heal it, one must work backward. Smooth away the burdens. Lighten all the pressures that experience has inflicted. Let the mind revert to the tranquility and to the peace it knew in babyhood. Then it must be built up again from there. Stronger, firmer, more assured.
But how can that be done, Marcus? What part did this tower room have in that experiment?
Look about you, Joanna. This would seem to be an ordinary room. It is furnished so that it would look that way. But it is not. This room is a large-sized cradle where my tired patients were rocked into a state of complete relaxation.
A cradle?
Yes. This entire room is suspended from that ridge pole in the roof. A huge belt line is hooked to that and runs down through that chimney to the motor in the basement. When the motor is turned on, the patient can be rocked without his being conscious of it. And that swaying movement of everything about him produces the same soothing effect as rocking an infant in the crib.
But what of the furniture?
It is all clamped to the floor. Come, I will show you. Here, this heavy bureau.
Why, Marcus, those clamps have been broken.
What? Yes. Now help me examine the other furniture, Joanna.
Marcus, someone has closed the door and locked it.
That cannot be. The patients are all locked in the rooms. It's locked, all right.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I can't understand this. Who would want to lock us up in here?
I'm afraid, Marcus. What if someone turns the motor on? This heavy furniture would mangle us.
Joanna.
Oh.
The cradle is rocking. Oh. Someone has turned the motor on full force. Be careful, the bureau.
Marcus, I'm dizzy. Oh.
Joanna. Marcus. Help.
Jim, this place seems to be deserted. Where do you suppose the Falcos are?
I don't know, Fern. But one of them must be around somewhere. Dr. Falco! Dr. Falco! Come on, Fern. I don't like the looks of this. We'd better see if John Martin's all right.
Maybe Tobias got word to Dr. Falco and warned him to leave. That way, Tobias couldn't be identified as the one who signed the paper.
Well, we've got Tobias where we want him anyway.
You left the inspector guarding his house, didn't you?
Yes, he can't get away. Ah, this is John's room. John, are you all right?
Yes, I'm okay. What's the matter?
This is Brandon. John, have you any idea where the doctor kept his keys?
Well, no, in his pocket, most likely.
Did Mrs. Falco have a set?
I suppose so. She delivered all our meals.
Run down to the kitchen, Fern. She probably kept them there. If not, look in the library.
Right.
John, the Falcos seem to have fled.
Fled? Well, that's strange. Up until 5 minutes ago, I heard terrible noises coming from the tower.
The tower? I'll have a look up there as soon as I get you out of here.
Here, Jim, I found this set of keys in the kitchen.
Good. Let's see, 201. This is the one for John's room. All right, John, come on out.
Well, what in the world's going on here, Mr. Brandon?
We don't know yet, John. But I think the best thing for you to do is to get out of here. Go down to Edith's place.
Well, whatever you say, Mr. Brandon. I'll wait at Edith's for you.
Right. Now, Fern, our first stop is the tower, up these stairs.
I can't understand how DeBias and Dr. Falco ever expected to get away with a thing like this, Jim.
Everything is beginning to add up a little too neatly. Ah, here's a door. Let's try this.
And the key's on the outside.
But the door isn't locked.
Jim, it's Dr. Falco and his wife.
Don't come inside, Fern. I'll see what's happened here. The whole place is a shambles.
Shall I call headquarters, Jim?
No, not yet. I'd like to investigate this place first. Well, the doctor and his wife are dead, all right. Battered to death by this furniture.
Jim, look. That whole room leads to one side.
Yes, and there are clamps on the floor where the furniture belonged. Why, this whole room is suspended from that ridge pole. Come on, Fern.
Jim, now that you've discovered that motor in the basement, and you know how the Falcos were killed, why do you want to examine the rest of the house?
To find out if any of the patients could have left their rooms.
But they couldn't have. All their rooms have special locks that can only be locked and unlocked from the outside. It must have been suicide, Jim.
Well, as soon as we finished here in John's room, we'll report this.
Doesn't seem to be anything unusual here.
No, it's exactly like all the others.
Jim, it stands to reason that if the Falcos had been murdered, the tower room would have been locked from the outside. That door wasn't locked. They could have gotten out if they'd wanted to.
Yes, unless the murderer unlocked the door after they were dead.
Jim, what was that you just picked up?
It was a small piece of cellulose tape. It was sticking to the floor here by the door.
Oh, I thought it might be a clue.
It is. Fern, drive into town and call the inspector. Tell him to bring a squad of men out to 1215 Larkspur Road.
What for, Jim?
The Avenger will deliver a murderer to them there.
I told you not to worry, Edith. Everything worked out exactly as we planned it. Tobias's goose is cooked.
Now, let me get things straight, John. In order to make the Falco's death look like suicide, you went back after they were dead, unlocked the tower door, and left the key on the outside?
That's right.
That motor in the basement could be set to stop automatically, couldn't it?
Yes. When I turned it on, I set the automatic stop for 15 minutes. I knew it would take Brandon longer than that to drive to White Ridge from Tobias's place.
The theory the police were going to work on is that when the Falcos realized their complicity with Tobias was known to the police, they took the easiest way out.
Right. That leaves Tobias holding the bag with a signature to explain and a suicide that the police will explain for him.
And you and I in complete control of the Martin Millions. Wonderful, John. Except for one thing.
You mean Burton?
Yeah. He's strung along with us all the way so far. But when you're in control of the money, what's to prevent him from trying to blackmail us?
How can he? We've got too much on him. He not only impersonated Tobias in making all the arrangements with Dr. Falco, but he managed to get Tobias's signature on the committal papers by placing it among a stack of form letters. He could get a stiff sentence for that.
I suppose you're right. John, did you hear a strange noise just now?
Yes. Seemed to come from that hall door. There's no one there.
There is someone here, John Morton.
Who is it, John? I can't see anyone.
You can't see the Avenger, Edith Worthy.
The Avenger?
Yes. I came to inform you of a forgotten clue. But you have obliged me with a complete confessional.
A clue? What clue?
A little strip of cellulose tape. But I think our jury will find it quite big enough to hang you.
Edith, quick, get the car. We've got to get out of here.
It's much too late for flight, John. The police have an appointment with you here. And those sirens should tell you that they have arrived to clip it.
Fern, did you send those notes of Dr. Falco's to the Medical Society?
Yes. Jim, do you think his theories may prove valuable in the treatment of mental cases?
I'm afraid not, Fern. About the greatest tribute we can pay the old gentleman is to say that he was sincere and idealistic, and that his treatments didn't do his patients any harm.
Jim, am I right in believing this case almost had you crying, Uncle?
Well, now that John, Edith, and Burton are safely in jail, I think I can risk admitting that.
It was that cellulose tape that tipped you off to the whole thing, wasn't it?
Yes, up until then, the case against Tobias was practically airtight and ingeniously clever. Edith's coming here pleading for help. John, obviously sane in the asylum. Tobias's signature on the papers, his denial of writing it. And finally, what looked like the suicide of the doctor and his wife.
Yes, but just what did that little piece of tape mean?
It meant that John Morton had figured out a way to keep the doctor from locking his door whenever it suited his purpose to do so.
But how? Well, John was locked inside his room when he got there.
Of course. It was part of his plan to be found locked inside then. But when he wanted the door to remain unlocked, he stretched the cellulose tape across the part of the door frame that the lock fitted into. It wasn't noticeable, and it prevented the lock from catching. When the doctor tried the door, John stood tight against it and held it, and the doctor thought it was locked.
Then all John had to do when he wanted the lock to catch was remove the tape.
Right, Vern.
But how did John know exactly when to kill Dr. Falco?
Burton called Edith and told her I was on my way to bring the doctor to identify Tobias. She went to White Ridge and warned John from the fire escape.
And John pretended he was insane when Burton, impersonating Tobias, took him to Dr. Falco to be examined.
Yes. Even the best psychiatrist can sometimes be fooled by a clever patient.
Well, that makes it all clear. Oh, Jim, before you go, will you sign that stack of mail? And you'd better form the habit of reading all your letters before you sign them.
All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
The Avenger.
Hi, this is Andrew from OTRWesterns.com. I wanted to invite you to come take a look at our site. We stream live OTR Westerns 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, along with putting out podcasts of old-time radio westerns. Check us out at OTRWesterns.com. You're listening to The Great Detectives of Old Time Radio with Adam Graham. Now let's get back into the show.
Welcome back. Well, Jim Brandon was kind of kind in the end. The best we can say for him, you know, is that he didn't do any harm. It'd be tempting to add, I suppose, well, the best we can say is he was a quack, but, yeah, kind of harmless and honest. I do like how the story kind of ran contrary to what you would expect if you'd listened to other old-time radio programs, in terms of the unlawful, committal. That was a theme of a lot of programs, and to have it where it was staged, I think for the time, definitely very clever. Though I think the fact that you had this murder scheme that depended on them going into the cradle room, that one's a little bit more iffy. It's like, how do you know they're going to go in there? It was the first time the psychiatrist had ever taken his wife in there. So it's very hard to improvise this sort of thing, it would seem. Well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback, and we start at the iTunes store where Ron Barron has a review. Adam has great enthusiasm for old-time radio, which is great. I also commend anyone who shares their collection with others, but Adam talks so much. I really enjoy background infos on the shows, but Adam kind of rambles with info, sales pitches, mailbags, etc., and chops out the classic commercials, which are an integral part of getting the flavor of the time period. There are several other shows out there that are much more well done. Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to write a review anyway. I have to admit, it has been a good long while since I've gotten the talks too much thing. I've really worked, because I think at one point it really was quite honestly a problem and too much. So I've really worked to limit my comments at the start of the program. And then if I go on, it's at the end of the show. And most of the times we're, around a minute, minute 15, that's kind of where I want to be. So I think we've got that part down quite honestly. And then at the end, you know, nobody's making anyone continue to listen, at the end of the program, because yeah, that's where you tend to get the length. So I appreciate your opinion, but I think we're pretty well balanced on that regard. Now, in terms of the classic commercials, when it comes to the Dragnet ads, I just find them repetitive. But we really don't cut ads on other programs. There are no ads on The Avenger. And there are no ads on Michael Shane, and rarely on Boston Blackie, because these were syndicated programs that the ads were inserted into. Now, there are some episodes of Boston Blackie which will have ads, which are going to be kind of fun, and we don't, you know, really plan on cutting them unless they are super, super annoying, but they're also super, super rare, so we'll keep that in mind. Johnny Dollar, the ads have been cut, but that's not me. That's the condition of the recordings that I receive them in. But thanks so much for taking the time to comment. Now we have some reviews on the app posted in the iTunes Store. 190,085 writes, highly recommend, donate to. And Jay Bird said, a great app that fits the love and passion of its podcaster. The search function is helpful, and the discussions preceding and following each episode are well researched and entertaining. And then we have IndyCat, who says, remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, listen to the old-time radio with Adam Graham. Indoors, outdoors, at work, in the car, or at home. Adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Helpful, refreshing, delicious. Try this app today. Oh, well, thanks so much for IndyCat. I'm like Wrigley Spearmint Gum, I guess. All right, well, that will actually do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for Defense Attorney. And then next Tuesday, another episode of The Avenger. In the meantime, send your comments to Box13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.